Okay, Dilian, I fixed it.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. Good evening, everybody. This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rise Radio Sinoland, Shenzhen, just south of the Tropic of Cancer. And I am so excited tonight. I have a very special guest on the show. Her name is Diliana Gaitanjiva. How are you doing, Diliana?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on your podcast. And hello from Bulgaria.
And let me tell you all about can I call you Dilian? Is that okay?
Yes, of course.
Okay. This is her biography. This is her official biography. Dilian Gaitanjiva is a Bulgarian investigative journalist and Middle East correspondent. Over the last 2 years, she has published a series of revealing reports on weapons smuggling to terrorists in Syria on 350 diplomatic flights. In the past year, she came under pressure from the Bulgarian National Security Agency, and after refusing to disclose her sources, she was fired from her job at the Bulgarian newspaper Trud Daily without explanation. Despite this, Diliana continues her investigations. Her current investigation provides an overview of the Pentagon's vigorous development of biological weapons. And wow, amazing stuff. And as I have gotten to know, in fact, this is the first time Diliana and I've ever talked together, but we've communicated by emails. And after you all listen to this, the friends, fans, and followers of China Rising, all you Sinolanders out there, listen to her tonight. You'll find out why she is an absolutely courageous, courageous woman. So thank you for being on, Diliana.
Thank you too.
Hey, Diliana, first off, please tell us about yourself and growing up in Bulgaria. It's sad to say, but outside of Europe, many world citizens, especially in North America, would be hard pressed to find your home country on a map. So, tell us about yourself and growing up in Bulgaria.
Well, yeah, I know that people are not much familiar with my country. Bulgaria is a former communist country, and I don't have much memory of that time. I spent almost 6 years in communism, so I can safely say that this legacy of communism is not something that I remember. That is why people think that here in my country, in Bulgaria, we are somehow pressurized or we are underdeveloped country. This is not true. What I can say is that the main issue in Bulgaria is freedom of speech. Probably this is the main issue everywhere. I used to work for Bulgarian TV and press, but after my last investigation into weapon supplies to terrorists in Syria, my former boss decided that it's not good for him to keep me in his team. So he, not even he asked the press secretary or the secretary of the newspaper where I used to work to send me my resignation letter and so on and so on. But I'm very thankful actually to what happened, because now I'm a freelance journalist and I work on my own, and I can investigate whatever I want, wherever I want, and can reach audience like yours, and I can communicate with people like you and your audience, which is great. Before I didn't have this opportunity. This in short.
How did you get into journalism, Adeliana?
This was my child dream. To be honest, I wanted to become a journalist or a surgeon. There was a point in time when I wanted to become a surgeon, but
Okay.
somehow I I don't know. I just felt that my future must be journalism because I don't know. This is what I dreamt of, and I'm very happy that I'm a person with at least one dream that came true. I'm very happy about that.
Well, you didn't become a surgeon on people, but you've definitely become a surgeon to take apart Western Empire, because your reporting is absolutely amazing, and we're going to get into that. Before we get into your two big investigations, just a lot of fans out there like to hear an explanation about how. I mean, I'm sure that when you were growing up, you probably had a very idealized version of the West, and that it was, you know, a shining temple on the hill, as they say, and it was great and good, and that it was out to change everybody to be great and good like the West. But obviously, at some point in your life, when did you become aware that, you know, Western media is what I call, you know, the big lie propaganda machine, and that, you know, and that our governments are not what they portray themselves to be? What was your arc of understanding? Was it like a slow realization, or was there an event or two that caused you to have an epiphany?
It wasn't a slow process. You're absolutely right, because when I was young, Bulgaria, my country, turned to the West. Bulgaria joined NATO, the European Union. We totally severed, the Bulgarian government totally severed all relations with Russia. And we were told that Russia is bad, the West is our future. So all of us believe that, yes, this is our future. But the process of me realizing what's actually going on was in Gaza, and then in Libya, and then in Syria. Because,
oh my gosh.
Yes, because I was international correspondent at that point in my early 30s. No, in my late 20s, to be honest. Now I'm 35, so in the last 8 years, let's say, since I started to cover international news, and when I saw myself on the ground, was the reality, for example, in Gaza, in Libya, the so-called revolution. It wasn't revolution at all, but I can give you an example in Syria, for example, last year. What I mean when I say I saw myself on the ground, I saw how Western journalists work. I don't want to say Western journalists. It is not about geography. It is about affiliation to huge corporate media outlets. It's not only about the West. You can find corporate media in my country as well. You can find such corporate media everywhere, and they push the official agenda of these huge corporations that have interest to invest money in media and in propaganda and lies. So when I was in Aleppo, it was in 2016, I will never forget what happened. It was at that point when hostages managed to escape from the besieged area that was under the control of the terrorists. So while running away and running out of this besieged area, they met journalists. We were waiting for them to interview them. There was one child, and there was a CNN's reporter who interviewed this child. Actually, we all interviewed this child. The child said, quote, "We were afraid that we are going to die of hunger." The CNN journalist dubbed the translation like, "This child says we were afraid that we were going to die of the Bashar Assad's bombs." It was not true. The child didn't say this, because the child spoke in Arabic, And probably this CNN journalist thought that nobody understood Arabic. Probably 200 million people understand Arabic around the world. But anyway, for this CNN reporter, what he says is what people will know. But no, it was a blatant lie. And later on, he was ridiculed on social media because people understand Arabic. I mean, 200 million people understand Arabic, and they caught him lying on camera. Anyway, this is just a small example, but in general, the general picture, what I saw in Syria in particular was devastating for me. For example, we stayed at a hotel in Western Aleppo. The terrorists, I mean all foreign journalists, because we were told that this was the safest place possible, and if something happens, we will be more protected if we stay in this hotel. So we all stayed there. This was the venue of the journalists. So the terrorists were located in Eastern Aleppo. These were Al-Qaeda terrorists, no matter that mainstream media presented them as rebels, fighters, revolutionaries, fighting for democracy or whatever. These were Al-Qaeda terrorists, or these were terrorists from the so-called Al-Nusra Front, which was at that point the official representative of Al-Qaeda in Syria. Anyway, there was a case when a rocket fell next to us and beheaded a mother and her child in front of us. We rushed to see what happened. I mean, me, my cameraman, my translator, and other Arab journalists. Western journalists didn't bother even to go to see, or at least to help, because there were victims, people suffering that needed help. They didn't bother even to report on this beheaded mother and her child, because the rocket came from Eastern Aleppo, where they reported were revolutionaries, freedom fighters, and they couldn't say, look, these freedom fighters, these revolutionaries, they killed and beheaded this mother and her child by a 122 millimeter Grad rocket. And this Grad rocket, or all these rockets, happened to come from my own country. I was shocked when the jihadists from Al-Nusra Front retreated from their positions in Eastern Aleppo. I had that chance. My cameraman and I got inside underground warehouses full of heavy weapons with Bulgaria as their country of origin. And when I got back to my country and traced back these shipments, it turned out that these weapons were just a small part of a bigger international scheme involving many countries. It wasn't only Bulgaria. Bulgaria was used as a supplier of weapons, producer, manufacturer of weapons. But the scheme was organized by the Pentagon, by the U.S. Special Operations Command, and Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. On diplomatic flights provided by the Azeri state-run company Silkway Airlines. And this is how I understood, actually, I saw myself, the real truth. The West, my country included, Eastern Europe, other, sorry to say, but puppet governments, because this is not my country, this is the Bulgarian government, they facilitated terrorism in the Middle East in order to push Western government agenda that what was going in Syria was a revolution. No, it wasn't. It was terrorists coming from 86 countries to Syria or to the Middle East, foreigners who had nothing to do with freedom or revolution. They were foreign fighters, well prepared, because you can't expect that somebody in his 20s just take a gun and goes to fight in Syria. No, I interviewed such jihadists. I had that chance in the beginning, and I interviewed them, and they were very straight and honest. They explained who helped them, where they were trained, who provided the weapons, everything, the whole scheme. These were well-prepared young foreign men coming from Western Europe, from the Balkans as well, Kosovo, Albania, luckily not from Bulgaria, and many other places, 86 countries around the world. This is not a coincidence. You can't have people from 86 countries coming simultaneously to Syria. This was a well-prepared and organized scheme, funded, facilitated, organized by these countries that wanted to topple the government of Syria, because the government of Syria didn't let them build or develop the oil pipes and projects that they wanted. I was at that point in Syria, so I saw myself what was this all war about.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the ringleaders of all this are, you know, the United States, NATO, Israel, working with Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states, and it's shocking when you realize that you know, that these terrorists are actually American and European terrorists, because it's the Americans and the Europeans who are paying for it, organizing it, shipping them around, moving them around, and then calling them freedom fighters in order to, you know, to destabilize and destroy governments that are not puppets of the United States and NATO, et cetera. It's just... it's like turning reality on its head, isn't it?
Yes, I wanted to explain something which struck me. While interviewing these jihadists, they were some of them. It was it happened in the beginning of the war, probably in 2013. So I was able to interview them in a safe location, and in Lebanon, because some of them came from Lebanon. So I met them and interviewed them. They were totally brainwashed. I just watched and I couldn't believe these people talked serious to me. One of them was from a group that had published previously a video of one of their members or fighters eating the heart of a Syrian soldier. When I asked why and how is that possible, this is cannibalism, he said, this is our way to send a message to the Syrians and to everybody. We are ready to do everything. And the second time when I had the opportunity to interview jihadists, it was interviews with prisoners that were in a prison in Damascus. They were totally brainwashed. You see their eyes, and their eyes are empty. No emotions, no feelings, nothing. I even interviewed a father whose 5-year-old child was also... with him. He took his whole family from Turkmenistan to Syria to impose Sharia law and to live in this Islamic State caliphate. But while driving his car full with explosives in order to bomb himself up, and his 5-year-old child in the car, he was arrested by Syrian soldiers, and he was imprisoned. But his child was taken care of by the Syrian authorities. So I wanted to meet this child and to see what the truth was. I wanted to be absolutely objective. I didn't believe this story because I was told by the locals and local journalists that there was such case that father took his five-year-old son to blow them up. I didn't believe. So I wanted to see myself when I saw how this father reacted, seeing his child walking around, no emotion, no regret. And he said that he wanted his child and his son to become a martyr, to live in heaven and to die in name of their pervert and twisted ideology. It is then at that point I realized this is a very serious program. This is not just ideology. This is well organized, and this is done by people who are well prepared, not only to recruit foreigners, but to brainwash them, to delete all their emotions, all their dignity, morals, ethics, everything. It was really shocking. You can't imagine how well organized this war in Syria was, or at least what I saw. It wasn't just a coincidence. Everything, weapons, terrorists, propaganda, fake videos, everything on a large scale. The thing is that Western people don't know that, and they're not guilty that they don't know and don't realize, because they don't have access to real news. And this is something that I fight for, the truth, and more people to see the truth.
The well, and also everything you just brought up. I mean, you don't do this for $5 or $10. I mean, this costs billions of dollars, and that money's coming from the CIA, Western governments, departments of state, ministries of foreign affairs, military, you know, NATO military, et cetera. I mean, they're spending, you know, untold billions. You know, again. As you said, tell us about the amazing investigation you did, where how the United States and its allies, you know, uses their embassies and diplomatic pouch privileges to transport, you know, tens of tons of weapons to distribute to terrorist groups in Syria. And for people who don't know what diplomatic pouch is, this goes back hundreds of years. In terms of the protocol of embassies around the world, is that patch of land, for example, the Russian embassy or the American embassy in a foreign country is like the land of that country, and the country where it is, like the U.S. embassy in Japan, cannot be inspected or invaded or violated by the Japanese government, and therefore the embassies have the right to bring in, under what's known as diplomatic pouch or diplomatic mail, they can bring in anything in you know, sealed locked bags, and the host country cannot look at it as long as the embassy claims that it is for diplomatic purposes. But as you pointed out in your extensive investigation, this has been grossly abused by, you know, and explain about the airline companies they set up, and they made them diplomatic airlines, and that they couldn't be inspected, and they were basically armed, you know, Western embassies were arms dealers, you know, shipping arms all over the place to try to destroy Syria. Go ahead.
When I got back to my home country, I traced back the shipments that I had filmed previously, and I started a series of reports. And a few months later, I received leaked documents originating from the Azerbaijani embassy to Sofia. After verifying their authenticity, I realized that it was a huge international scheme involving diplomatic flights, with weapons originating from Eastern Europe, the Balkans, Israel, many countries. The Azeri embassy to Sofia did confirm that they had been subjected to a cyber attack, so there was no doubt about the authenticity of these documents, and they I counted 350 diplomatic flights full of heavy weapons carried out by the Azeri state-run company Silkway Airlines. The leaked files included correspondence between the Bulgarian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the Embassy of Azerbaijan to Bulgaria, with attached documents for weapons deals and diplomatic clearance for over flights and landing in Bulgaria and many other European countries, also the United States, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, to name a few. It was a huge, huge story. So I published these documents, and in brief, I want to say how the scheme worked. Silkway Airlines provided this service, diplomatic flights for weapons, to the U.S. Special Operations Command, to Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, because these were the parties that paid for these flights and these weapons. Interestingly, here in the scheme we have private American companies involved and tasked with the transportation of the weapons. Private American companies had been awarded at least $1 billion since 2015. At least $1 billion worth dollars worth of weapons, and they are among the main customers of the diplomatic flights for weapons service provided by Silkway Airlines, these American companies which supplied weapons to the U.S. Army and U.S. Special Operations Command. The common element in these cases is that they all supply non-U.S. standard weapons, hence the weapons are not used by the U.S. forces. And when you see the end user certificate, in the end user certificate, the end user is not indicated, which is a gross violation of international law, of everything. I don't know how Bulgarian authorities and other Serbian, Albanian and other foreign governments, I don't know how they accepted this end user certificates and how they approved of them. But anyway, when you have such huge international scheme involving the Pentagon, CIA, Saudi Arabia and others, probably nobody cares about international law. What they care is money, obviously. No. We are talking about $1 billion worth of weapons. When I first showed my footage from Aleppo with Bulgarian weapons inside the warehouse of Al-Qaeda, the Bulgarian authorities said, no, we don't export weapons to Al-Qaeda. Of course no. And nobody expects that, but the Bulgarian prime minister would have signed a contract with Baghdadi or Julani, the leaders of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. We don't expect to find such a contract. The scheme is different. But because I didn't provide such a contract between the Bulgarian prime minister and the leaders of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, the Bulgarian authorities said, no, this is not an evidence. This is not evidence. And Bulgaria is not involved directly. It is not involved directly, but Bulgaria is the manufacturer of these weapons. And Bulgaria has accepted end-user certificates that are totally fake. Because when you don't know where these weapons go, you are not allowed to sign and to allow the export, something that Bulgaria did and many other countries did. They just turned a blind eye to the fact that these weapons were shipped on diplomatic flights to terrorists in Syria. Not only in Syria, many, many, many other countries.
Yeah. I remember reading Gene Sharp, the mastermind, going back into the 80s. he was the mastermind of a CIA mastermind of all the color revolutions, and the first one being Tiananmen in 1989, and he was actually sent to I think it was Tajikistan or Uzbekistan, and he was pulled out of retirement, and I think they sent him there hoping to try to trigger a color revolution there. And after he got there, under diplomatic pouch, 1,500 tons of God knows what landed at a military base that the U.S. Manages there in that country. And you can't tell me that was, you know, compact disc players and food and stuff. It was undoubtedly arms and materiel to try to destabilize the country. So, yeah, I think this has been going on a long, long time. And I mentioned Tiananmen Square during the 1989 CIA orchestrated Tiananmen Square protests in China. Tens of thousands of imported tents and camp stoves and lamps and fuel and sleeping bags and walkie-talkies and radios were readily available to all these penniless students, none of which was available in the local market at the time. And then later, you know, minivans full of loaded Kalashnikovs, you know, ammunition belts magically appeared around the square, you know, in the West, you know, last desperate attempt to create a government overthrow. And also ditto NATO's military bases, you know, used to ship heroin out of Afghanistan, cocaine out of Colombia, you know, and elsewhere for the CIA MI6, you know, drug network to smuggle in the stuff to Western and other markets. So, you know, and for example, you know, one of the most famous cases is everybody knows that MENA, M-E-N-A, Arkansas in the United States was and is, you know, a CIA cocaine airport and distribution point, but no local or even national authorities can intervene. So do you mentioned that this, it wasn't just Syria, but that I feel like this has been going on a lot longer than we realize, you know, at least back to 1989 with Tiananmen, and you're saying you seem to feel that it's much more widespread than just Syria.
Yes, because in the documents that were leaked to me, I found many diplomatic cargo shipments with weapons to Africa. Africa is a region that is, as we all know, rich in natural resources and gold and diamonds, the so-called blood diamonds. And Saudi Arabia paid for these diplomatic cargo shipments with weapons to different African countries, such as Burkina Faso, Congo, many other places in Africa, Somalia as well, where there are terrorists now fighting. So they probably got weapons. I'm talking about 2015, 2016, and 2017. They got weapons originating from the Balkans and paid for by Saudi Arabia. I mean, in the documents, it is written that the sponsoring party was Saudi Arabia, but these weapons never ended up in Saudi Arabia. They ended up in Africa. What's the logic? I mean, why was Saudi Arabia buying Eastern European weapons that were not compatible with its military standards? Because Eastern European weapons are non-US standard weapons and non-NATO standard weapons. And Saudi Arabia and its army uses US standard weapons. So all these non-US standard weapons from the Balkans or from Eastern Europe ended up in Africa and in Syria, also in Yemen and wherever you can think of different destinations. And I can give another example. There was a flight to Burkina Faso. 1 week later, there was a military coup in Burkina Faso. It just coincided. It coincided the weapon supplies to Burkina Faso coincided or preceded by a week The military coup in Burkina Faso. It is not just a coincidence.
Yeah, well, not to mention at least going back to George W. Bush and probably before, but the White House, well, and this is something that Obama used ruthlessly, the White House has something like 135 special operations armies, battalions that they can secret all over the world, and most of them are in Africa, and I'm sure that these diplomatic pouches are used to supply them arms, and they the soldiers probably come in, dressed as civilians, and then they get all of their war material and C4 explosives and guns and everything through the embassies, through the diplomatic pouches. So as Douglas Valentine, he wrote a great book, The CIA as Organized Crime, and you really cannot understand Western governments, and you really cannot understand the way Western, capitalism slash, I hate to say it, democracy, slash, geopolitics works, unless you look at it as like just one big criminal enterprise, and your work, shows this in spades. I mean, it's just. I mean, these are crimes against humanity, but the West is absolutely imperious and can do whatever it wants and get away with it. So bravo on all your work on all the illegal shipments of arms, through U.S. and European through U.S. and European embassies and their Middle Eastern allies. I actually learned about Dillion. I actually learned about your courageous work when helping found the Bioweapon Truth Commission, and you were kind enough to give us permission to catalog your work in its global online library. And I mean, if what you just described is bad enough, I mean, the West's aggressive use of chemical and biological weapons goes back to World War I. And it has been in high gear ever since. Our Bioweapons Truth Commission has records going back into the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And then you pick it up, and today, in real time, that the West's use of biological and chemical weapons, I mean, it's planetary, it's massive. I mean, it's relentless, and it's costing untold billions of dollars and euros and millions of lives. So please tell us about your discoveries from, from the bioweapons, the bioweapon investigation, because it's stunning. When I read your reports, I was just like my head was spinning when I got finished.
Yes,
Go ahead.
my head was also spinning. I'm a middle. People ask me why I take interest in bioweapons. I'm from a younger generation that which doesn't have that much memory of biological weapons. So for me, it was quite a shock to get into this investigation and this topic. But while checking the military programs of the Pentagon in Georgia, because I had information that terrorists in Syria came from Georgia. I mean, they weren't Georgians, they were foreigners trained inside Georgia. So I was checking what programs were running inside Georgia, and this is how I understood actually. That the military programs in Georgia didn't end only to the Syrian conflicts. They were a lot more sinister and dangerous, not only in terms of Syria, but the whole of the world. And one of these programs was actually one military biolaboratory, which is located. Just 14 or 15 kilometers from the US Vazjani military air base in the capital Tbilisi. This is a secret military biolaboratory funded by the United States, funded by the Pentagon. What I discovered was that, again, we have the same diplomatic cover, the same use of diplomatic immunity provided to private companies and US military scientists to perform experiments on viruses, toxins, bacteria, and insects abroad. What I discovered is fully based on leaked documents that I received from Georgian insiders. I don't want to go into detail about the identity of the insiders, but they are linked, they are high ranking, and they are linked to the Georgian government. I trust what I received. I verified the authenticity of these documents, and they implicate the U.S. embassy in Tbilisi in trafficking of frozen human blood and pathogens as diplomatic cargo for this secret U.S. military program. These internal documents prove that Pentagon scientists have been deployed to the Republic of Georgia and given diplomatic immunity to research deadly diseases and biting insects at the Lugar Center, the Pentagon biolaboratory in Georgia's capital. There are many shocking facts, experiments, documents, some of which prove that during one of the American programs on hepatitis C in Georgia, there have been registered 100 death cases or cases of death. In the documents, it is written that the cause of death is either unknown or not related to a new experimental treatment with free medicines provided by an American company. This American company, Gilead, the main shareholder in this company, this is the former Minister of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, I read that. It's just like you can't make this stuff up. It's like a horror movie from Hollywood. It's just incredible, Adiliana.
What was really shocking was people from Chechnya sent me a video of white powder or traces of white powder being spread all over a village near the border, Russia-Georgia border. They said that they noticed a drone disseminating white powder over them. And when I checked what's the possible reason or origin of this drone, it turned out that the United States has a patent on a toxic mosquito aerial release system, which means that somebody who turned out to be not a real person. I checked, I looked for the inventor of this toxic mosquito aerial release system. Turned out to be a fake person, fake name. That such a person doesn't exist. I reached out to the lawyer who filed the application to the U.S. Patent Office and Registry, and I was denied any comment. Anyway, such invention, drone that can release a toxic mosquito, it is like a horror movie, but it is written, and what is even more shocking, that it is written in detail in this patent what the probable use of this drone could be. It could be used by the U.S. Special Forces and other intelligence agency to incapacitate the enemy, whatever that means. How is this possible? But it is possible. And also, if you read other documents originating from the U.S. Federal Contracts Registry, Such drones that can disseminate biological weapons have been tested since 2012 at Dugway Proving Ground. This is the military facility of the U.S. Army in the state of Utah, where biological agents are being produced and tested for their dissemination via aerosols, powder, or even by explosives. And this is really happening. The U.S. Army officially denies development of biological weapons. They say this is not offensive program, this is defensive. They say, yes, we produce, we test such biological weapons inside the United States at this military facility because we want to know how to protect the United States and our troops if such a biological weapons attack happens. But if you have the military capabilities to produce in order to test biological weapons, then you have military capabilities to use them against the enemy. It is the same. It doesn't make a difference. And especially when you have military biolaboratories of the United States in 25 countries across the world, because because the Lucas Center in Georgia is just one of the main laboratories in 25 countries across the world. This is a $2.1 billion program, military program, and this money has been invested in offshore biolaboratories, or officially they say the health of the population, local population. How is that possible? I don't believe that the U.S. government would spend $2.1 billion on the health of foreign people instead of the health of its own citizens. Yeah. And this is the U.S. taxpayer money. And U.S. taxpayers must know how their government spent their money. But they probably don't know.
Well, the you know, it's just, you know, the Bioweapon Truth Commission, and I'll put the link in the and the article for our interview. I mean, we demonstrated. I mean, the United States has been working since World War II. I mean, aggressively to learn how to use bioweapons to kill people, millions, hopefully, as long as they're communists and socialists. And they use bioweapons. The United States blatantly used bioweapons with insects during the Korean War. And it just simply has not stopped. I mean, they have tested. I wrote an article. I mean, they've tested, you know, biological weapons in subways and on people. It's tens of hundreds of thousands of Americans were used as guinea pigs. You know, subway systems, cities have been tested on their own people, and not to mention, as you say, around the world, you know, the Zika virus is owned by the Rockefeller Foundation. The United States, you know, sprayed dung, a swine flu virus over Cuba and wiped out 800,000 pigs. They had to completely rebuild their entire swine herd. The United States sprayed dung fever over Cuba. This is all back in the 70s and 80s and killed thousands of people and you know, made sick, you know, tens of thousands of people. Dung fever. And what's the other one? I'm having a brain burp. The one where they had the outbreak. Anyway, it's owned the. Oh, so upset, I forgot. It's a virus. Anyway, the virus.
I mean, we can mention the Ebola virus.
Yeah, Ebola. It's owned by the patent is owned by the U.S. military. Yeah, Ebola. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And there are three military biolaboratories of the United States, Pentagon biolaboratories, located exactly at the epicenter of the Ebola crisis. One of the Pentagon contractors working under this military program happens to work also in Sierra Leone. And interestingly, this private American company, Metabiota, was awarded a huge amount of money to do work, to perform work for the Pentagon before, 3 years before the Ebola outbreak in Africa. It is not clear what work this private American company had to perform for the Pentagon, but this happened 3 years earlier, before the Ebola crisis. The same company has projects for the Pentagon under this program in Ukraine and in Georgia as well. It received around $18 million for work in Georgia and Ukraine. In Ukraine, the Pentagon has been operating 11 military biolaboratories. Why 11 military biolaboratories? Ukraine is not such a big country, but it is very important for the United States, and it borders as well as Georgia on the U.S. main rival, Russia. Many of these biolaboratories, if you see on the map, they are located in countries that
border Russia.
Russia and also Iran and also China.
Yeah, of course. And they can move it all around. They can move around all these toxic viruses and chemicals and other, you know, germs. They can and they can move it all around from embassy to embassy in diplomatic pouch. Isn't that incredible?
This is the scheme, exactly the same scheme that they use to traffic whatever illegal they need to transport or to transfer under diplomatic immunity. It is the same like the weapons, the conventional weapons for the terrorists. The same happens with the biological weapons. I don't say that they have developed biological weapons in the meaning we have munitions or something like this. I'm talking about new types of biological weapons. You can't see them. You can't sense them. They are new types of biological weapons that we even don't know that have been invented or developed, but these secret projects that have been performed, they raise a lot of questions. For example, why has the Pentagon been collecting Russian RNA and synovial issues? Why are these military scientists studying Russian strains of anthrax, for which Russia has vaccine, also Crimean, Russian strain of Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, and the plague, only Russian strains? What for? The Pentagon doesn't have soldiers in Russia. I mean, it is not for protection for American soldiers. It doesn't make sense. Even according to instructions by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, which oversees the program, it is written in case of importation to Russia, this biological material must be shipped in a diplomatic pouch. I don't know what this biological material could be, but transported to Russia in diplomatic pouch by diplomats, this raises a lot of questions.
Yeah, it's just shocking. The good news is that your work is starting to get some recognition, and your report about Georgia, by the way, for those who are not really familiar with Asian geography, Georgia is a small country that used to be a Soviet republic. In fact, it's the home country of Joseph Stalin, and it's on the northeast corner of the Black Sea, and it's sandwiched between the Russia, Turkey, Armenia, and Azerbaijan. So it's in that area called the Caucasus, and unfortunately, it's now a loyal whore for Western interests. Anyway, you did some just, I mean, brave and, you know, brave and crazy. I mean, it's just what your report that you did on Georgia and the risks that you took and the dangers that you put yourself in front of. You're getting some recognition, and you're going to have a documentary that's going to be broadcast on Al Madin TV. I heard on September 20th.
Yes.
And you can you tell us about Al Mayadeen? It's obviously a very a brave media company. I recall Andre Vlecek may have done a documentary or two with them, but can you tell us about your documentary and about Al Mayadeen, and how can we watch it?
Al Mayadeen is a Lebanese TV channel. It is one of the most, if not the most popular TV channel in the Arab world. So when they broadcast the documentary in Arabic, we'll also publish an English version of the documentary, because I originally did the documentary in English, and I will publish it, and whoever wants to watch it can watch it in just a few days' time. It cost me a lot of efforts to film this documentary, but it was very important for me, because when I come from a very small country, Georgia is the same. Georgia is like Bulgaria. I mean, people globally even don't know where we are on the map. And we don't have the right to speak up or to voice our concerns or to be independent. I am fed up with that. We are independent countries. Bulgaria is independent. Georgia is independent country. And we must once and forever say that we don't know foreign military bases on our territory, or in the case of Georgia, not only military bases, but also military biolaboratory. I talk to local people, and most of them are very scared. Georgia is even poorer than Bulgaria, and people say if we protest or take to the streets, we will either lose our jobs or they will threaten us, and we are very scared. But this must end, and we must protect ourselves and our territory, because, for example, in the case of Bulgaria, we have three military, U.S. military air bases for free. They don't pay for using our sovereign territory. They are here for free. How is that possible? I mean, for example, in Turkey, at least Turkey takes millions of dollars or billions by the United States for providing its territory for a military basis. In Bulgaria, we do it for free. It's not about money. I'm talking about the principle. It is not, in my opinion, I'm anti-war. I'm against any military base here on my territory, in my countries. It is not about money. It is about the mentality. It is about this sense of this slavish way of thinking that small countries have. No, we are sovereign countries, and we must stand up and protect our territory. That is why this documentary was very important for me, so that I can help Georgian people, and not only Georgian people, to realize the importance of speaking up and protecting their own territory. And by the way, this project, the Georgian government knows very well what this military biolaboratory is all about. It is against Russia, because Georgia is in a state of actual, let's say, not war, but conflict, confrontation with Russia, due to territories on the west, on the north of Georgia, that Russia recognizes as its own territory, but Georgia doesn't recognize them as Russian territory. And in the local population of Abkhazia, for example, they recognize them as Russian. So it is a border issue. And that is why Georgian government allows the United States to have such military biolaboratory on its territory, because they know it is against Russia. They know very well. I don't have any doubts. That is why they have left foreign military scientists to do whatever they want under diplomatic immunity on their own territory. I don't have other explanation. It could be either this or corruption. By the way, a few days ago, the Georgian National Security Agency announced they had launched an investigation into possible corruption scandal related to the American program on hepatitis C that had resulted in 100 death cases. I hope that this investigation would implicate the real culprits, those who are responsible for the death of all these people in Georgia.
Wow. So so when it comes out on September 20th, Dilian, it's going to be in Arabic, right?
Yes, it's going to be on in Arabic, but
okay. When will it be out in the English version? When do you think that'll be out?
The next week.
Okay. If you promise to send me the, I mean, I'd like to have the link in Arabic because I've got, you know, there's Arab speaking Sinolanders around the world, and I'd like to, if I can find out the link or tell me how to watch the program on the 20th, and then please send me the link how to watch it in English, and I'll do another article about that so people can follow up on that, and because I want to see it for sure. And again, I think your work is, I mean, you make more celebrated journalists like Seymour Hersh look like wallflowers. So you're really a very brave and courageous woman, and I tip my hat to you. Hey, listen, before we sign out, throughout all your reporting, you seem to have come across people, you know, working on the inside who are obviously against the evil deeds of their organizations organizations are perpetrating. If someone wants to confidentially send you evidence of crimes being committed, how do they do so? Do you have some kind of encoded Dropbox or email address? What if someone has some information they'd like to send you, how would they go about doing that?
Yes, I have. I will send it to you, but people can easily just send me a message on social media that they want such a private contact. I will immediately send to them.
Like a secret Dropbox or something, yeah. Like that. Okay. I will also, Diliana has Twitter, Facebook. She's got her own website, and I've put several links in the article. Hey, listen, Diliana, you're a real inspiration to me, and I think you're probably, I know you're an inspiration to a lot of other journalists out there. As I was thinking about you and writing about you, I was thinking about a couple of songs called "Brave and Crazy" by Melissa Etheridge and Tom Cochran, Western singers, and you really are. You really put your life on the line for the truth, and that makes your work very special, and I commend you.
I'm very thankful to you, and these words that you said, they mean a lot. I don't know what to say. I don't think that way. I think that what we all need to do, we must do it, no matter what.
Well, Diliana, I'm going to get this thing posted, and let's blast it out all over your social media, my social media. Patrice Granville at the Greenville Post has already told me he's going to post it, and Sinolanders across the planet, and Diliana fans across the planet, and then Greenville fans. This interview will be heard by many tens of thousands of people, and your voice needs to be heard, and your work needs to be more exposed, and I'm really honored to have an opportunity to do that with you.
Thank you very much. It was such a pleasure to talk to you and to your audience. Thank you.
Okay, Diliana, as soon as I get this up and running, I'll let you know. Thank you so much, and bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.